Here we go. So episode 7 of Life Seed, 7 in heaven. And maybe it's going to be a little heavenly when you go to the Good Seed. We're going to meet today Melissa Cameron from the Good Seed, find out a little bit more about her. Melissa, Amanda, meet Melissa. We're all meeting for the first time right now.
Have you done many Zooms during quarantine, Melissa?
Yes, actually.
Oh.
Lots of virtual garden consults, right? Because especially last year, it was sort of uncertain if you could go out and do sort of that type of garden visit. So it's been a lifesaver.
I can't wait to hear about those consultations. We'll let you kick it off with some cues though, Frankie.
Yeah, so when it comes down to Melissa, what's really kind of important to get to know her a little bit, organic master gardener. I'm very curious a little bit about your background as well. High-rise urban residential development, now a garden coaching business, a business that actually installs gardens, and you can even buy some things, including some plants. And it all started out, Melissa, with cherry tomatoes. When I read your bio, it says that your fondest memory of your garden when you were a kid growing up were cherry tomatoes. Tell us about the progression, how things have gone for you.
Sure. So my father used to grow cherry tomatoes in our backyard in Etobicoke. And I was a kid who went to summer camp. And sort of one of the most wonderful memories I had was my dad sending me a letter, and in it were the seeds from that first tomato that had ripened on the cherry tomato plant. And I felt so special and so connected to home, even though I was obviously far away. And so it was just wonderful. And then, you know, I've always had my own garden, and I worked in a great field for a long time with a condo developer here. And I took some time off to grow my family and really got into growing food in my garden. And when it was time to sort of reemerge back into work, I decided to become a stockbroker.
Why not?
Why not? So I did the securities course, and I was crying every day and just not feeling it. And finally, my partner said to me, "Well, what do you really love?" And I said, "Well, I love my garden and I love growing food." And that was the genesis of the whole thing.
Love that. That your partner actually said, "Okay, this is not the Melissa I know that Melissa can be." What was that conversation like? Because I myself have had a similar conversation like that in life.
You know, it was very freeing, and I felt very supported, which was lovely. I think that I've always been someone who's picked up things fairly easily and very well-rounded. And I think sometimes that's a great thing as a person, but I think sometimes it's kind of a disservice to you, right? And so when I finally realized, oh, I really connect with growing food and helping other people grow food, a light bulb went off. It was really special and awesome.
So it kind of went from growing buildings to maybe growing an investment with stockbroking to now it's growing a garden. So it's all about growing. Tell me a little bit about the Good Seed, what you're doing today, right in this moment.
Sure. So the Good Seed is my baby that I've had for quite a few years now, but we do a couple of different things. So we have clients where we design and install edible gardens, but it sort of has evolved from a landscaping business to something a little more intentional and becoming a garden educator. So most of the clients that I work with are in the garden with me, and they want to learn alongside me, and they're very excited to just grow food and learn. We also do pollinator flowers and cut flower gardens. That's something that's really, really taken off. I think local flowers is a big movement right now. And then I have a couple of side projects that I do. So I have a partnership with Luai from Urban Veggie Garden, and we've launched a course this year called A Year in the Urban Garden, The Journey from Seed to Plate. And it was born because last year, of course, in the pandemic, we just thought, well, how can we get this message out? So that's 12 modules, and we take you through the whole gardening season, which is really exciting. And then I have a side project with a farm in Markham, Ontario, where we grow local food. We have farm to table dinners. That doesn't happen right now.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Yeah. And I just started a not-for-profit charity garden with a partner of mine called the Abermory Garden Collective. And we're growing food for families with young children who don't have access to organic produce.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much, Melissa. I like what you said as well earlier when you were just kind of saying well-rounded, you know, interested in a lot of different things. But I heard this analogy just yesterday. Frankie, I haven't told you about this. And I think that this applies a lot to me too. I just love so many different things. And it's almost like as if your interest is a source of light. And if you almost spread it over too many things, it becomes dim and you can't see in the dark. And it sounds like you've really honed that light in on gardening. And even though you're doing a lot of different things, the light is strong in a way in that one direction. I know that's a bit frou-frou, but I just loved that so much. And Frankie knows this. My dream is to have a cut flower garden. So as soon as I read that on your website, I was so just gave me butterflies, which also goes with the pollinator garden. But what I want to know is there's this one quote on your site that says that no one has a black thumb. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, what are some of those stories or those people where they are just like, honestly, Melissa, I don't know anything. And I'm kind of needing you to start me right from the seed all the way into something that is growing. Do you get a lot of people that are like that? Or do you get people who are kind of middle of the road?
Honestly, there's a huge range in people's experience, which is lovely and keeps it very interesting. People I think are a little bit intimidated because houseplants are hard to grow. And so when you translate to the outdoors, they're like, oh, I kill everything I grow. And, you know, paradoxically, plants just want to live, you know.
Yes.
You can see a tomato growing in the crack of the sidewalk and it's there not because you planted it, but because nature wants it to thrive. And so I think it's really important to demystify growing, and it's really important to make it accessible and to break it down. And I try to share things that are anecdotally successful, but also science-backed, to have people grow a very successful garden. And I think the real secret, and everyone's thinking about growing plants, but really we should be growing soil. And that's sort of the really big secret that I guess we don't talk about enough in this sort of environment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I just had a friend send me an article yesterday on regenerative farming, going back into the soil. And to me, the soil, sometimes people say it's dirt, and I hate when they call it dirt because it's almost like they're devaluing the earth. And the earth itself is a living, breathing organism that will, if you feed the soil and or allow the soil to feed itself, it'll feed you. And I think that's a lot of people need to kind of figure out that whole circle of life, because it really is a circle of life. And I love it that you said, you know, indoor plants are hard because they're dependent upon you. Outdoor plants, Mother Nature kind of helps you along the way. And I always say, I want people to have a successful garden. So to me, it's not about the funky, weird, or interesting or challenging to grow. To me, it's like, I want to give you the simplest cake mix that you get so that you can have a beautiful cake. So I'm thinking you're going to continue cooking. My philosophy is like that with gardening. And I see that you're the same.
Definitely. I also think it matters where you're gardening. In the city, I mean, I live right downtown Toronto. Space is limited. If you have a balcony garden, if you have a raised bed garden, you know, we want you to grow something that's high yield because that's what's going to feel successful, right? So luffa and cucamelons, and you know, we could go into all the sort of trendier things to grow, but really, like, grow arugula. That's successful.
I got some lettuce on my balcony right now. I'm pretty happy about it.
Right. So high yield.
I actually have, for some weird reason, I have Swiss chard right beside me.
You know, pumpkins aren't for urban gardens, right?
No.
Yeah.
Oh my and God. So,
yeah, I'm curious. So let's talk about those. Like right now, you just said about high yields. What are five go-to vegetables and or fruit that you would get people to grow in an urban center? And what are five that you would not want them to grow?
Sure. So I think let's look at spring, cold tolerant, and then heat lovers. I think, you know, for sure, herbs, and I'll just call that a broad spectrum category. They're easy to grow. They can grow in small containers and spaces, and they're pretty tolerant for first-time growers. I think lettuces and leafy greens, and that category is so big. Lettuce, arugula, you know, the pak choys, spinach, all of that stuff is super easy to grow. Container growing is great. I would then say in the heat lovers, you know, maybe you want to grow thematically, grow a salsa garden, grow chives, cherry tomatoes, cilantro, a jalapeno, and, you know, you've got an instant sort of harvest that you can do something with. Five things I wouldn't grow. You know, honestly, I mentioned cucamelons. I don't love cucamelons. I don't really feel like they taste like much. They're great if you have kids because they're sort of novel, but they're not for me. I would say, again, these larger vining plants. You know, melon is super hard to grow in the city. Raccoons love it. They'll wait until sort of it's a peak ripeness and attack it. Corn is also a really big bait for the raccoons and the squirrels. It takes up a lot of room, requires a lot of nutrients in the soil. I don't know how many we're up at now. I think also, don't grow anything that you don't love to eat.
Yeah, that's one of Frankie's number one tips. So what's your most exciting thing to harvest during the year?
I mean, tomatoes are pretty exciting. It's cliche, but they're delicious. And when you're growing from seed, you can really start amazing different varieties. I also really, really enjoy basil. I love the smell of basil. I love pesto. I feel like you can put it on so many different things in the kitchen that you're creating. So yeah.
Frankie, one of your number one go-tos that I've learned from you over the year is grow your tomatoes with your basil. And it tastes better, and you've kind of got pizza in a little pot there. I love that so much. But Frank, that wasn't my question. I actually have such a better question coming up. We go back on these, back and forth on these questions. So when I was reading on your website, I saw a word, Melissa, that I have never seen before. And as soon as you mentioned the soil, I was like, oh, this is my moment to ask you about it. And I know you already know. So I'm going to try to pronounce it. It's Huggelkultur.
So that's Huggel culture.
Oh, like hygge.
A little bit. I think it's around the same the same sort of origins. So Huggel culture is using different wooded materials to build a really vibrant and sort of long-lasting bed. And so you'll see them in traditional permaculture sort of as mounds that kind of look like this. And there's layers of leaves and different sized logs and things like that, different bits. But in urban gardening, they have a really interesting application. I'm sure you guys have seen those raised beds that are like metal and that are quite tall. So sometimes they're like 3 feet tall. On my website, I have some horse troughs you can see too that are planted in. So if you were to fill that with like grade A soil, money.
Yeah. Right?
So a great way to build soil and add biodiversity in the like ecological garden is to create a Huggel culture bed. And so you would fill the bottom of those raised beds with logs and branches and leaves and things like that, which will decompose slowly over time.
So cool. So cool. Just that you're using... Yeah, I was reading about it. It increases the soil fertility, water as well. It'll contain that water and the soil warming. I've never even thought about that. So I guess decaying would kind of also release some heat.
Yeah, think about composting. Same idea, right?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, Frank, you got some troughs in your backyard. That's so funny.
I do. And you know what? When you look at old garden books, that's a technique that was used for hundreds of years. You know, if you really want to know if your composter is working, they often say to put a metal pole in the center of your composter, feel the top of the pole. If the top of the pole is warm, it's showing you your composter's working, especially in the summer. In the winter, it's totally reverse. But those are just some fun facts. I want to talk to you a little bit, Melissa, as well, about chickens. I know you're an advocate of chickens, and my friend Silverio has chickens. Actually, my mom's neighbor, I live in the country. I live up in Bradford in a rural area. So my mom's neighbor has chickens and I always get eggs, and the eggs are really cute. They're multiple colors. They're fantastic. They taste delicious. The eggshells can be used. But let's talk about hens and chickens in urban centers. Why do you think that's something that you would like to see?
Well, I think from a speciesist perspective, like allowing some pets and not others is sometimes a little bit random, right? I mean, I love all animals. I love dogs and cats, but chickens are actually very, very efficient animals. So you can take your compost, you can take your, you know, things that you would normally put in the green bin if you're in the city and feed it to the chickens. So that's one of the things. And then, you know, they're using that, they're going to give you eggs. If you collect chicken droppings and allow them to compost as well, you have a really, really great soil amendment. So I just think really, really practical. Chickens are practical. I live in Little Portugal and there used to be chickens in backyards everywhere here. So when we got chickens, all the neighbors were like, oh yeah, that's a thing. You do have to be mindful in the city. Obviously critters are a problem, most specifically rats.
A lot of people love the romance of chickens.
Right.
And the reality is they throw their food. And so sometimes you get rats, but you can manage that as well.
Definitely. I think it's just about an awareness. And the other part is from a good management perspective, you know, you'll see that the coops are quite small. It is important that you consider whether or not you can let your chickens out and that you have a space where they can roam. They like to take dirt baths. They like to forage for insects. I have a couple of service berry shrubs in my backyard and the chickens would jump for the service berries. So yeah, I think you have to consider all those things, just like you might not put a massive dog in a condo, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. True. Another thing, reading about your services in the one-on-one, we love to talk about small spaces here on the podcast as well. And as soon as I saw vertical gardens, this is something that is just so trendy on Pinterest as well. You see all these beautiful vertical gardens for really small spaces. My curiosity is, I have a balcony that absolutely gets smoked by sun, hoping to put a bit of an awning because I know that that can just be a problem. But what would you suggest putting in that vertical garden?
So depending on the container, you know, what's going to get you success in vertical gardening is a great container that matches these sort of root development of what you want to grow. So if you want to grow lettuces or radishes, you know, you could have gutters and grow in gutters. But something with a more developed root system, like hot pepper, you know, is going to need more gallons. So in that case, you might want to have sort of a tiered riser system where you're placing your plants on a balcony. And if you do have one of those south-facing, like microclimate, the sun's here, the wall's here, it's just hot, 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 go for those heat levers, go for the eggplants and the peppers and the determinate tomatoes. Those will thrive. Stay away from those greens because they don't love that heat.
All right, Frankie, that's what we're building this summer.
Yeah, and I think eggplant is like a sexy plant. I think it's got like this really nice foliage. It has a purple bloom on it, gets this black to purple fruit. There's little fingers, which is also a funky variety. There's Sicilian eggplants. I think, Melissa, like one of the sexiest vegetable plants out there is the eggplant.
Eggplant is gorgeous. The flowers look a little bit like potato flowers too. You know, and I think you're right. There's the ping tongue, which is sort of that longer finger eggplant. There's the traditional black diamond, kind of the juicy large one, the Rosa Bianco, which is stunning. It's got like purple and white. And then there's even white eggplants, which, you know, it's amazing what you can grow.
Who knew someone could know so much about eggplant? You never know where we're going to go on this podcast. Already I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to have an eggplant vertical wall. It's going to be great. So let's go to thegoodseed.com. Melissa, this website is stunning.
Thank you.
You also have a shop on there. But if I was signing in for your coaching, can you kind of just take me through what the coaching part of your business would include?
Sure. So I think it's really important when you're starting off to either, if you're a reader, I think there's some really great resources out there, but the internet is a wild place, right? So one person can tell you to grow something one way and another person can tell you another way. And what the coaching and the mentorship sort of services allow you to do is have access to me to answer questions and to answer questions that are very particular to your space. So I actually do an onboarding process with clients where I ask them sort of practical questions like describe your space, describe, you know, your access to water, the time commitment you're willing to put into your garden. And then we ask some more ethereal questions like, what need does your garden serve? You know, do you want to have your kids eat better so that they're in the garden learning to pick a pea off a vine? Or are you looking for a spiritual space? Are you looking for something very aesthetic? So it's a nuanced process. Yeah.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah, that's the true thing, is people will see pictures and they'll be like, this is what I want, this Charleston-esque front balcony with all these hydrangeas, but then they don't even have a hose or the time to garden. Yeah, Frankie.
Gardening is a physical leisure activity. It really is. It's something that you, if you put in, you'll get out. Melissa, tell me a little bit about going through this process in the garden. Is there anything from the garden that you think helps you learn about yourself, or even about challenge, adversity, growing through the darkest moments? Tell me a little bit about that.
Definitely. I think the garden is probably one of the most humbling places you can be. First of all, I think, you're obliged to be in the moment, and you really develop some important life skills that I think as we get more connected to our phones and the internet, we sort of lose. And so patience being one of them, keen sort of observation is another one. I think in order to have a successful garden, you have to slow down. You have to notice what's happening. As many prescriptions as we can come up for and say, you know, water every 2 days, or if you don't put your hand in the soil and feel like, is it wet 6 inches down? Is it not? Then you don't know. If you don't notice when the leaf miner eggs appear on the back of that Swiss chard you have there.
No, I hate
oh. Right? You're not going to catch it soon enough. Yeah. So on top of the garden being a place for solace and a place for renewal, I think it teaches us patience, observation, and humility.
You mentioned being a mom yourself, and then you also mentioned, you know, teaching kids a little bit about plants. Do you think that this is almost a family affair, loving gardening?
I think it's a generational affair, right? So just as my dad helped me, and I'm sure you guys can attest to this too, it doesn't happen in isolation. And I'm a really big proponent of getting your kids in the garden and making sure that you allow them to do the work. So my two-year-old was broad forking yesterday in a garden to loosen soil. If you don't let them try, they won't feel that sense of ownership over the process. And, you know, I think kids who are picky eaters or who don't understand where their food comes from beyond the grocery store have this beautiful awareness when they start to grow a garden, you know, of how a pea is grown or how a radish is formed or trying an edible pansy. There's just, it's magical.
Yeah, that's true. I like what you said too about the patience thing. Frankie, I'm sure you can attest to this having kids as well. It's just, it's so cool being able to see something grow and be like, oh, not yet. We can't pick that yet. It's just not ready. That's such a nice little, I don't know, thing for life as well.
Kids really get excited. You know, a teacher said something to me, which was really great. And the teacher said, if there was ever a child that he had an issue coming to school, what he would do is always bring, have that child sow a seed. So the child had to come back every day to see if the seed germinated. And then there was some ownership and it gave the child a purpose. And I think gardening gives us all a purpose. And I think many times we go back to it when we're retiring and when we have time, but it really serves a purpose and it gives us an end product. And, you know, Melissa, I joke about this all the time. I say that gardening's better than therapy because at the end of the day, you get tomatoes.
Yes.
It's so true. On your website, you said that you help people achieve their garden goals. Have you ever, this is kind of funny, have you ever been in a scenario where you've helped someone achieve their goals? You're like, shoot, now I'm envious of their garden.
Oh, all the time. All the time. I think that, you know, living in the city, I'm always envious of people who live outside of the city and have tons of space. But you know, it's such an incredible job in the sense that seeing someone so joyous around that first tomato they've ever grown, or having pictures like sent to me or DM'd to me about a flower or a butterfly on milkweed or a kid eating something, like it's wonderful. And so I'm always happy when they grow wonderful gardens.
Yeah.
What's next? Yeah, what's next for you? What's next for the good seed?
The good seed is growing. Hoping that there'll be some really exciting things coming in the future. hopefully a book, and then also just expanding our online offerings and course offerings. That's been super successful for us this year. It's allowed us to engage with people who are gardening alongside in real time and is sort of pandemic proof at this point, which I'm feeling pretty good about.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like we've all grown a lot through this pandemic. Well, we already know that gardening is a slow process, but I mean, this past year was also a bit of a deja vu moment every single day. What's one of the biggest things that you've taken away from 2020 and also 2021?
You know, make the most of the moment. The fact that we couldn't go anywhere and we had to stay with our home with our family and be close, it's just been a huge blessing. And I think we all won't go back to rushing around just in the same way we did before. And that's a really nice thing.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what one thing, Frankie, I've been concerned about? Is because we are always releasing so much content, right? And I'm sure you can attest to this as well, Melissa, is like growing your brand. It felt like at the beginning of quarantine, everyone was like, okay, I can do this. I'll learn a new language. I'll get super fit and all these things. And then second quarantine, we were like, no, you know what? I'm going to catch up on this Netflix show. And now coming out of it, and maybe I'd love to hear both of your advice on this. My concern is we're going to go back to that phase. We're like, okay, so now I'm expected to do all of these things again. So that's been kind of my concern with coming out of this quarantine. What do you think, Frankie? You think, are you concerned you have to overperform now?
You know what? I'm not. I think what happens is, and I think even when you operate your own business, you kind of get to this where you know where your maximum is, and then you got to set your own boundaries. It's kind of like a garden as well. If you only have so much land, well, you only have so much ability to have put out so much yield unless you get more land, more resources and build. I think you should just do as best you can with the time you have. And then to make you a better person, you need to be performing, but also time for yourself. The same thing with the garden. I will say to people, you know, I never want you to be a victim to your garden where they actually try to make the garden too big and try to get too ambitious. I want you to have your garden teach you, and I want you to enjoy your garden. How do you feel, Melissa?
Yeah, I think that's really sage advice. I've definitely said many times over the last 12 months, no, that's too big of a project for a pandemic. Like, mm-hmm. We all have too much going on. I think the other big takeaway is collaboration. So, and I think there is a beautiful synergy. So in the soil, there's lots of microorganisms, lots of different worms and all sorts of things that collaborate to grow big plants. And I think we all just need to embrace collaboration a little bit more. Pre-pandemic, I felt like it was a very like selfish, go for your goals, get there. And sort of post-pandemic, like I'm so happy to do something like this where people are reaching out more, people are engaging more and collaborating more. And I think if we can move forward with that energy, it's going to be phenomenal.
My goal is always to motivate more people to garden. And so that's why I do a lot of things. I do a lot of things where there's no return in terms of financial return or anything like that. And even I think the collaboration is great. I agree with you. And I agree that even in the gardening space, sometimes you'll find people that will try to find that people are competing with other people. There is no competition. It's really about growing a community and growing more gardeners and really supporting them. Everybody needs the information. Everybody needs to know what to do, and everybody's killed a plant, and everybody out there has been a first-time gardener at one point in their lives. So it's a journey. And if you can do that journey with the village surrounding you, a village helping you or collaborating with, you're going to be better. And Melissa, I have to tell you as well, talking about collaboration, I have a program called Elevated Eats. So Elevated Eats is where we elevate food education and elevate food choices for Toronto's hungry. So I've been doing it with Yorkdale and Oxford Properties. And I grow everything in crepes and food crates. So the ones that you see at the grocery stores. So if with your project, if you want some collaboration with crates and things like that, I have a relationship with IFCO, IFCO. They're the company that produces those food crates, and they're actually very generous on helping with that program.
Amazing. Thank you. That would be wonderful. You know, I think that access to healthy, nutritious, organic, regeneratively grown food, you know, shouldn't be a luxury. And the more we can help others who don't have the same opportunities that we do, you know, I think we're doing a good thing. So.
Yeah, me too. I feel the same. I eat really well as a kid. My family were farmers. So I still have family that are farmers. They grow lettuce and they grow Swiss chard, chicory, beets. Mm. Actually, if you see a vodka called Site Vodka at the liquor store, that's my cousin's vodka because they're taking all the beet mash and carrot mash and turning it into vodka.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Their vodka originally was really bad. It was terrible. They turned that into hand sanitizer.
Oh no.
In the pandemic. This is a true story. Their vodka was so bad that they were like, oh my God, how do we, you know, turn a sow's ear into a silk purse, right? So what they did was they turned it all over into hand sanitizer and they were able to pay for their equipment and they did really well with the hand sanitizer.
That's actually so on trend though. Good for them.
And he's my neighbor. He lives across the street. We're so Italian.
Oh my gosh. This has been so good, Melissa. I love it so much. Is there anywhere that you think you want people to find you the most? I know you have your Instagram, your website. I guess I just answered that question.
Yeah, I mean, either works. I think during the gardening season, I am probably less on email and more on Instagram just because I want to be sharing in real time what's happening. So it's at the Good Seed TO, and you can figure out how to connect with me otherwise. And I think, you know, thank you guys for this opportunity. It's great to talk gardens and life and like-mindedness. It's wonderful.
It's amazing. Thanks for being here today. Amazing. And you know what? I learned a little bit about planting a seed, growing a plant a little bit more. We always learn together. I usually do a wrap at the end, like kind of like a really like, you know, get down to your Swiss chard and party with your beets or let us turn up the beets.
Oh, turn up the beets. That could be a really good bumper sticker.
No, it's lettuce. Turn up
lettuce. The beets. Wow.
Oh God. Okay. We'll just end it with that. But Melissa, thank you very much. And to great gardens and happy garden season.
You too. Bye.
Bye, Melissa.
Bye, Melissa. Take care.
The good seed. Melissa is a good seed.
Yeah, she's a great seed, you know, out there trying to get people to have their garden confidence build up. So that's part of it too, right? In order to get in your garden groove, you have to have some confidence. And sometimes it doesn't matter about what you're doing. If it's a sport, you need a coach. And she's offering some coaching as well to help people, a little bit of online as well. And that's what I love. I think that there's more information, there's more help for gardeners that are out there. And I love about how gardening keeps you humble.
Yeah. And also one thing I really took away from that, and I've honestly, I know we're only on episode 7, but I've taken away from almost every single episode, is how it's never too late to start learning about gardening. And almost all of these people pivoted from something else.
Yeah. And sometimes in life, you got to go where your gut is. And sometimes you'll say to yourself, my guts is to go to the garden, and that's where you should go. That's, you know, go to your calling, and then you'll find that your passion will take you to many different places.
So
me too. Yeah.
Melissa was so passionate about soil specifically. Yeah. I want to hear you break down a little bit about soil in the garden, whether it's, you know, you're growing in pots, you're growing in crates. Can you give us just a bit of a soil breakdown?
So there's different soils for different purposes, right? And so sometimes what you're doing is you need to find a lighter soil or a heavier soil. So in pots, we're usually looking for a lighter soil. And sometimes you hear the word soilless mix because those lighter soils in containers are not necessarily living soils. So those are the soils that are made up of loam and perlite and vermiculite. And that's where you have to add nutrient in, meaning that you have to fertilize. So containers, you should be fertilizing. If you have a garden and even the troughs, you can use more living soil, which is sometimes compost or something that has a mix within it. And when that's living soil, that actually has, it's always going through the cycle of life. There's always decay that's happening. So there's different microorganisms, and you'll hear about mycorrhizae, that are breaking down the soil, eating the soil. And as they eat, and the best way to describe it is like a worm. Like a worm's like a bigger version of mycorrhizae. So as the worm goes ahead and eats some of the roots and the flowers and the leaves, more so roots, and it goes to the bathroom, worm castings, that's nutrient for plants. So that's the circle of life. And that's why you want to feed the soil. A lot of the times with many different types of agriculture now, what we're doing is we're growing the same crop, we're stripping the soil, and then we're actually not allowing it to have a period of time where it actually regenerates. And that's where we're having problems now, where we're using higher amounts of fertilizer that puts phosphorus into water. And because mm-hmm. there's phosphorus in the water, then all of a sudden we impact the environment. So there are improved ways. Farmers are doing a great job. They're actually doing they'll do crop rotation. So there's a lot of great farmers that are out there. That's about the soil. Soil is living, right? So when you hold soil, you're holding a living thing. And yeah. The more you invest, the more you feed, the better it's going to be.
I like how you said, let's call it soil, not dirt, because it's so true. You think of something nutrient rich when you think of soil. I grew up around farm fields, so I know all about, this year we've got corn, this year we've got soybeans, because it's all about that crop rotation and the runoff as well, algae blooms in our lakes. It's just so important to know.
It really is. And that's sometimes your garden in your backyard can teach you about what's going on in the world with mm-hmm. agriculture. Because agriculture is the production of food. And, in 50 years time, we got to double our food production in order to sustain the population. So we're in a pandemic right now, but food insecurity in the future will be one of the biggest discussions. And so if we can teach people how to grow food and we can become more innovative on how we are growing food, then we got a greater future.
Yeah, that topic specifically has pushed me to more wanting to learn how to grow food. And as Scotty and I look for a new house, we're always on realtor.ca, like we're trying to go through all these processes, figuring out what we're pre-approved for. And always in the back of my mind, whenever someone asks me, and you asked me last week, what are the top things you're looking for? I'm thinking, I'd love to have a backyard. I could have some raised beds because I want to be able to grow some of my own food, because it really does help kind of give back in a way. You know where your food came from, but then you're also not taking from a bigger source that could go to other people too.
Yeah, I just did an article for Money Sense magazine about, growing your own food, will you save money? The first couple of years, you're not gonna save any money, but over time you can save money on certain different types of crops. But what you'll do is you'll have a greater value for food overall. So instead of that tomato rotting on your counter, when you purchase the tomato, you're gonna know the work that's gone behind the tomato, and that'll allow you to appreciate that tomato more. And it also makes it a lot more fun when you grow your own food, and it makes food, your meals taste better. And you'll hear me joke, like if you pull fresh herbs out of a garden and you throw it on a plate and you have people over, they think you know how to cook, even though you may not.
Oh yeah. And you have no idea how to cook. I'm just kidding. It's literally just a plate and some basil on there.
No, caprese, but think about a caprese salad.
Oh, right? Mamma mia, beautiful. You got the tomato, you got the basil.
And a little bit of nice cheese, right? Oof. You got to do a nice little, buffalo mozzarella, right? So a nice slice of tomato, a little bit of buffalo mozzarella with a nice large leaf, basil there, a little nice olive oil that's from the earth, love. And then maybe just a little bit of balsamic vinegar.
Oh, some dried parsley even on there, dried basil on there. Oh,
nothing dry.
Fresh. This is the moment in the podcast where I'm like, this is a pretty good mic and my stomach is growling pretty loudly. Wait, I have one last question though before we go, because I know it is lunchtime. When you were a kid, and I know you probably had something that you picked off the vine. I remember going to my friend Shelby's house. They had a raspberry bush behind their pine trees. We would sneak back there. You couldn't see us. And we would just be picking off the vine, eating those raspberries. We also would always have tomatoes, like cherry tomatoes, on our deck at home. My parents would grow them. And it would just be bumping out there. And there's nothing better than picking something off the vine. Tell me a memory being a kid picking something off the vine.
Can I tell you several memories right now?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so
let's dig in.
Growing up, we were growing lettuce, romaine, celery, and fields of it. And so I can remember being in the middle of the field, being hungry, and just ripping a head of romaine out of the ground and eating it, or pulling a carrot right out of the ground and then just taking the carrot and then kind of brushing it over the tops of the other carrots to clean the carrot. And then I would just go ahead and eat the carrot. Going to the Ontario Food Terminal. So I used to go to the Ontario Food Terminal with my dad to sell flowers, but also our produce when we were growing produce. And right beside us was one of the bean and pea growers. And I would just go over and eat as many beans and peas that you wouldn't believe. And my stomach would be on fire sometimes that I ate so many beans and peas. In the greenhouse, my grandfather had a fig tree, and his fig tree was, we still have the fig tree at both greenhouses, and the figs would just be almost ripe. And my grandfather was really, really protective over his figs. And I would sneak in and steal his figs and eat the figs.
He's like, how do I get these pests out of here?
So my nickname by all my uncles and by many of my family members, I'm Rabbit. So they actually call me the Rabbit outside of Frankie Flowers, because I'm always eating from any garden, wherever there's fresh produce. And still to this day, when I'm watching a movie, I'll eat a head of romaine instead of a bag of chips.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I actually had a little bit of a jogged memory because my parents have a backyard that kind of slopes down. And at the bottom, they had a little veg patch, but it was more of just a rhubarb patch. There was this one wild rhubarb that would grow there. And yeah, being a kid, anytime I see rhubarb, I think of going down there, harvesting it, making sure you don't eat the leaf.
Yep.
Do not eat the rhubarb leaf, people. And then just dipping it in sugar. And that was like your excuse as a kid. You get a rhubarb stalk. That's your excuse as a kid to get in the sugar bowl.
Sugar and rhubarb, sour and sweet. And what a treat.
Makes what a my treat. Heart beat. There we go. Melissa actually got her wrap.
Boom.
Let us know. Maybe I'm going to post a little thing on our Instagram at Life Seeds Podcast, guys. I'm going to post a little thing as almost a prompt, because I want to hear what you were eating as a kid, what you were picking off the vine. We need to know. We need to know. All right, Frankie, you can find me at Below the Blonde on Instagram. How about you?
You can find me at Frank Ferragini on Instagram, or you can go on to Facebook and at Ask Frankie Flowers and frankieflowers.com. We're always here to grow great things.